Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Episode 177. Fleetwood Mac released Rumors in 1977. True story. Sometimes when listening to Rumors on Sirius Radio and having the GPS on at the same time, the GPS tells me to go my own way. Isn't that cute? Go, go, go! Welcome to the 177th episode of the Prof G Pod. In today's episode, we speak with Molly White, a software engineer and leading cryptocurrency critic. We discuss with Molly the bear case for crypto and the pitfalls of Web3. Okay, before we bust into what's happening, we have some Prof G Media news to share. What a thrill! Alert the media. We here at Prof G Media are innovating. We're launching a new episode of the Prof G Pod and moving some things around. Every Monday, beginning July 18th, we are coming to you with a 20-minute episode focused on the capital markets. You'll get our team's perspective and insights on the top stories and markets and predictions for the week ahead. We're trying to, one, I'm fascinated by the markets, and also like to think that we can give you a no mercy, no malice view of what is actually going on, or at least speculate in the boardroom and behind the scenes. Having spent a ton of time on boards, raising money, advising hedge funds, you know, kind of a big deal that's now hosting a podcast. What happened? Anyways, our office hours episodes are moving to Wednesdays. And as a reminder, you can ask questions by visiting officehours.profgmedia.com. Again, that's officehours.profgmedia.com. That is by far my favorite part of all of this is the office hours. I really enjoy hearing people. And I'm also surprised and moved sounds a little bit corny, but I am moved by how transparent and authentic people are in their questions. Our No Mercy, No Malice audio edition, where we do a voiceover on our Friday newsletter of the same name that now has 250,000 subscribers, started with 70. Go figure. Anyways, our No Mercy, No Malice audio edition read by the inimitable George Hahn hits the feed every Saturday. I love George Hahn. It helps that he's an actor and has a dreamy voice. But George Hahn is my Twitter friend. I generally try and avoid anybody that wants to get together with me, A, because I don't enjoy people, but B, I just assume everyone on the internet is either weird or not who they say they are. But George Hahn is my Twitter friend. I started seeing all his hilarious videos during COVID, and I actually DM'd him and said, love your stuff. We started a dialogue, and now we're offline friends. So that's my one Twitter friend. By the way, this is not an invitation to reach out to me and ask to be friends. And what a thrill. You still get our conversations with Blue Flame Thinkers every Thursday. Okay, what's going on? So megalomaniac Elon Musk has decided to back out of the deal to acquire Twitter. You may have heard. What a shocker. By the way, in bigger news, he also blocked the dog on the social platform, right? So I wanted to figure out what he'd said about bots. So I went to his account on Twitter and it says, you have been blocked. And here's the thing. I was never following him. I don't really care that much about what he says or does. Who do I follow on Twitter? Stuff that makes, I think it's funny, or economists, or interesting thought leaders. My Twitter feed, I think most people would find pretty boring. But anyways, he had proactively blocked me. And let's be honest, that's nothing but trying to get my attention. The sexual tension here is palpable. So I say, I kind of like it when he blocks me. What I say is, bitch, block me harder. Anyway, Most reporting says that Twitter has the upper hand since the firm has a specific performance clause that requires Elon to close the deal as long as he has the debt financing in place, which he does. We'd like to think that Twitter will come out on top here, but we aren't dealing with someone who likes to play by the rules. And in addition, Twitter is still an operating business that has employees and shareholders to worry about, so a lengthy legal battle isn't what they want to endure. That's the narrative out there right now, and I think that is total bullshit, and people are getting it wrong. As someone who has been a shareholder of Twitter a couple times, I think every shareholder here is entitled to $54.20. Why? Because the company has endured a tremendous amount of damage and distraction, whether it's advertisers losing faith in the platform, whether it's management and the board being wildly distracted, whether it's a decrease in morale among employees, many of whom have likely left. This company has been significantly damaged by Elon Musk. Now, why did they incur that bullshit, that brain damage, that sort of abuse? Because he signed an agreement saying that on closing, he would show up and give every shareholder $54.20 per share. Twitter has lived up to their end of the agreement. They have done everything he has asked. And now he owes every shareholder $54.20. So what do I think is going to happen here? I think the board understands this, and I think the media has it wrong. They keep saying, well, Twitter doesn't want to endure discovery. Twitter doesn't want to endure discovery? This is an individual that last year decided to have a baby with his girlfriend, good for him, but at the same time had a subordinate carrying twins that no one knew about, and they didn't disclose till 6 months after he'd given birth to the other kid. By the way, do we realize that approximately the same time the company had paid hush money to someone accusing him of sexual misconduct? Let's pick another really popular person. What if Tom Brady, in the same month, quarter, year, had said, oh, I'm having a baby through surrogate with my partner. Oh, by the way, someone in the franchise who I have power over, who reports into me, is also carrying children and twins. And oh, the Patriots had to pay off somebody for hush money. I don't think it'd be on the Patriots. As a matter of fact, I think it would have been kicked out of the league. Our idolatry of innovators here has to stop. And where does it stop? In my opinion, in the Chancery Court. What is the Chancery Court? It's a court set up to deal with corporate disputes. It does not have juries. They have a lot of discretion here. It's usually over economic settlements that require a decent amount of nuance here. And this is simple. For an economy to work, you have to have agreements that people, when they sign and review these agreements, live up to. What happens when nobody feels a need because they're rich or because their superpower is shamelessness? They no longer have to live up to agreements. What happens when you agree to show up for work because you have a signed contract and the employer says, you know what, fuck you, we decided we don't really need you. Sorry you quit your job. What happens when you agree to buy a house and you show up and you sell your own house and the seller says, you know what, the market's gone up. I'm not going to sell you my house. You're shit out of luck. What happens when you sign adoption papers? If we don't have a rule of law here, or we have rule of law for everyone else, except for billionaires and specifically billionaire tech innovators, the economy doesn't work. Emerging from Silicon Valley over the last decade has been a culture that has been very damaging to capitalism. One, the way you make a lot of money is to exploit your users, to radicalize them, to play on their depression, to play on their need for addiction. And two, that management can act like total fucking assholes and have no decorum and believe that the law does not apply to them. This needs to stop. He signed a contract. He's a big boy. He has the money. Twitter shareholders are entitled to $54.20 per share. Elon, pay the fuck up. We'll be right back for our conversation with Molly White. Support for the show comes from Betterment. Even the most hardcore of us need to kick back and chill every now and then. But if you're an investor, chill is the last thing you want your money to be doing. You want it to be pumping iron and running marathons for you. If you want your money performing at an Olympic level, you might want to check out Betterment's automated investment and savings app. Betterment's automated technology gives you advanced tools that are built to help maximize returns. Tools like diversified, expert-built portfolios of low-cost ETFs, high-yield cash accounts, and automated investing technology, including automated rebalancing. Plus,
Betterment can help with tax-efficient investing. Strategies including their Tax Loss Harvesting Plus and asset location can help minimize your taxes and maximize your returns. So whether you're saving or investing, your money should be working as hard as it possibly can for you. Consider Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. You can visit Betterment.com to get started. You can learn more about high-yield cash accounts at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed. Cash reserve offered through Betterment LLC and Betterment Securities. Betterment is not a bank. Support for Prop G comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software, including Jira, Confluence, and Trello, help power the collaboration for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR, and legal, can stay connected and moving together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Welcome back. Here's our conversation with Molly White, a software engineer and leading cryptocurrency critic. All right, let's bust right into it. Molly, walk us through the state of play in the crypto space right now as you see it. It seems that things are, it's a volatile market. How would you describe the state of play?
Recently, we've definitely seen a decline in the price of most crypto assets pretty severely. I mean, you know, people are referring to it as a crash. People are saying the bubble has popped. To some extent, that seems to be true. Things are not going so well in the crypto world right now.
Well, not to state the obvious, but that seems pretty obvious. Any thoughts on why this is happening?
It seems to be a combination of a lot of things. I mean, the traditional financial markets are down, and I think despite what a lot of crypto proponents might have you believe, they track each other fairly closely. And so downturns in traditional finance seem to be affecting crypto. I think also there's just been a large number of sort of cascading failures in the crypto world where there have been, you know, crypto hedge funds and exchanges that have been taking far too much risk that have been causing just, you know, issues throughout the ecosystem, failures of projects like Terra, things like that.
Yeah, it does seem, supposedly one of the benefits of crypto or tokens was they were supposed to be a hedge against other assets. And it looks that as the market matures, they're increasingly correlated with other assets. So when the market goes down, so does Bitcoin. Well, tell us more about hedge funds or funds that have invested in crypto. Do you expect to see a lot of these go out of business? I would imagine it's chaos at a lot of these funds who borrowed money against their holdings such that they can make more investments. It seems like the delevering here, I don't know if we're a quarter of the way done, halfway done, 90% of the way done. Can you speak at all to the investors and what's going on in the crypto fund space?
Yeah, I think chaos is probably a good word for it. I mean, there have been a lot of funds like that have been heavily, you know, loaning money from other funds. And then when, you know, one fund can't meet their obligations, things begin to really fall apart. And I really feel for the retail investors who were putting money into exchanges that had exposure to these things, because they're starting to see the real fallout from that, where, you know, multiple exchanges have either frozen withdrawals or even, you know, announced that they are, you know, considering bankruptcy as a result of these highly risky loans that I think a lot of customers didn't realize they were even exposed to.
Where do you think we are in the process? Do you think it gets a lot worse? Do you think that Bitcoin and some of these assets have found a floor? That more and more, I heard that Three Arrow or whatever it's called, the headquarters in Singapore, they showed up and that the founders have fled. I mean, this just is all starting to sound really, really sketchy. Do you know the biggest kind of sole purpose crypto funds in the United States and how they're doing? I don't even know them by name.
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head, but, you know, it's hard to say where we are in the process. You know, I don't try to predict the price of Bitcoin or what will happen because this always end up being so much weirder than you could ever expect. But I think, you know, that some of these processes will take time around people trying to see if they can recoup any funds from things like, you know, groups like Three Arrows Capital, who are, you know, at this point, who knows what's happening there? They can't find the founders at this stage. And so, you know, I think there's a lot more uncertainty ahead, regardless of, you know, what happens with the price of Bitcoin.
You've been a big critic of all things Web3, whether it's crypto or NFTs or the blockchain itself. What's the source or the fire, if you will, kind of driving this skepticism?
I became really concerned with crypto somewhere towards the end of last year when it was kind of on a bull run and I was seeing some of the hype beginning to become extreme. I mean, people were really pushing crypto to the average person, you know, advertisements from influencers and celebrities, people saying that, you know, anyone should be putting money into these cryptocurrencies, whether it's Bitcoin or some sort of altcoin. And there was very little skepticism being applied, which I think is always a bad thing, regardless of how good or bad the actual topic might be. And that was when I sort of started to become involved. And I started to see, in my opinion, there was very little behind this whole thing besides the hype.
Are there certain aspects of Web3, whether it's the tokens or NFTs or DAOs, that you're less or more skeptical of?
I'm generally skeptical of the idea that blockchains are a good technology to power the future of the web or future of society, some people will say. They are good for a small number of use cases and not good for many, many more. And so when people begin to try to tack them on to general web use cases, because that's what interests venture capitalists, for example, we start to see people doing really risky things, you know, storing content to the blockchain that really ought not to be stored in such a database, exposing their users to highly risky financial investments. Those are the types of things that really worry me about this idea that the web as a whole is going to start moving towards, you know, this financialized blockchain model.
And you keep a running total of the amount of money lost to Web3 grifts and scams on your site. You call it the grift counter, and it's currently more than $10 billion. Why is this such an incredibly ripe sector for fraud and scams?
Well, there's been pretty poor enforcement of regulations in this space so far. So people have been able to get away with, you know, Ponzi schemes and outright financial fraud that is typically shut down fairly quickly in more traditional markets. There's also some element of anonymity that is just accepted in the space. So people will trust their funds to completely anonymous people. And then if those people run off with them, there's very little that they can do. There's also some aspects of cryptocurrencies that are just particularly well suited to financial fraud. You know, it's very difficult, for example, to reverse a transaction if you put money into a cryptocurrency and then send it somewhere that you didn't intend to, or that, you know, you were tricked into sending it. You can't call up your credit card company and ask them to reverse the transaction. And so, you know, it's been an absolute blessing for financial fraudsters and scammers because it enables them to take money from a lot of sort of unsuspecting people who have been sold this dream that if they take these huge risks, they might make big returns.
And have you seen, my understanding is that someone did the analysis and said that all the money that everyone made from the meme movement, they've given all of it back. Do you have any sense for what the losses are like, and are there specific groups that have been hit harder than others? I know it over-indexes on young people, but who's really taking the brunt of these losses here?
Inevitably, it's the retail investors who are getting hit the hardest. You know, they might not be losing the largest sums of money because they didn't have that kind of money to invest in the first place. But, you know, if your average person has put too much money, you know, an unsustainable amount of money into crypto and then crypto crashes, they're the ones who can't pay their rent or, you know, meet their student loan payments or, you know, pay for their everyday needs. So, you know, it's not the venture capitalists that I worry about or the multimillionaire, you know, hedge fund companies that I worry about. I really worry about the people who are being sold this dream, you know, in October or November of last year.
And you signed a letter to Congress along with 25 other technologists and crypto critics calling on them to treat the Web3 space with more skepticism and move towards regulation. What tangible steps would you like to see Congress take to regulate the space?
I think they really need to clarify some of the governing bodies in the space so far. You know, there's been a lot of people have been falling back on the fact that there has been little clarity around whether or not cryptocurrencies are securities or commodities or some other asset class. And they've been sort of, I think, taking advantage of that lack of clarity to, you know, run unregistered security schemes. And I think, you know, taking steps to address that will be useful. Taking steps to address money laundering and wire fraud. Taking steps to handle the risks associated with stablecoins. You know, I think there's kind of any number of things that could be done to apply strong regulation to this space. I am more skeptical of whether or not there's the political will to actually do so.
We'll be right back.
Support for the show comes from Grammarly. Sloppy writing can be the death knell to any potential client, investor, or employer. Emails and messages already lack the tone and subtle social cues you need to understand what the person actually means. But when grammar and spelling mistakes enter the picture, it can make it impossible to decipher what anyone's trying to say. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all the wasted time and money that goes with it. But it's more than just a grammar check. Grammarly can help generate AI prompts or even help you strike the right tone and personalize your writing based on audience and context. Here at the Prop G team, we use Grammarly, and all I have to say is it's made us more productive and made our work output just better, higher quality. Plus, Grammarly integrates seamlessly across 500,000 apps and websites. No cutting, no pasting, no context switching. Personalized on-brand writing help is built into your docs, messages, emails, everything. So why not join Grammarly to work faster, hit your goals while keeping your data secure? Learn more at Grammarly.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline. Because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And do you see a lot of crypto bulls? We compare this to 2000, where there's a fallout, but then Yahoo, Amazon, eBay, you know, will emerge. Do you see any enduring technologies or companies here? If you had to bet on a technology or a token or a platform, is there anything that you think is going to make it out the other end?
I mean, so I don't put any money into this stuff. You know, I personally don't feel that there is anything worth investing in. I think, though, honestly, the most promising companies that have come out of this are companies like Chainalysis, who are being used to basically address the problems that the widespread adoption of cryptocurrency and blockchains have introduced. So, you know, Chainalysis, for example, allows or helps law enforcement to track, you know, money laundering that's happening with crypto. If someone steals a whole bunch of money and then they launder it, Chainalysis tries to help law enforcement unwind that. And so, you know, they've created a market for themselves largely. So, you know, they're doing pretty well, I would guess.
So whenever I try to have a balanced discussion around crypto, and that is highlight some of the things that sound, you know, that, okay, Solana is not going to replace the dollar, or I don't understand how different wallets can bid up the price on an NFT and that's not fraud. Whenever I attempt to have a reasonable discussion here, there is no reasonable discussion. People either believe it's a scam or that you are a terrible person if you dare question how everything's not going to be run off the blockchain globally. I can't imagine, or I'm speculating, you get a, I would think you would get a tremendous amount of grief, borderline, you know, online harassment. I'm curious if that's the case and B, how you deal with it.
It is to some extent. I mean, people really do not like the people who push back against crypto because, you know, I think largely it threatens the bottom line. There's a tendency, I think, among journalists and others in media to sort of present the bulls and then the bears and, you know, say, all right, and now figure it out yourself, with very little sort of questioning around some of the claims that are being made, fact-checking, you know, questioning around some of the, you know, whether or not it's responsible for some of the bulls to be making statements like they are. And so I really worry that the media landscape is actually contributing in large part to some of the harms that we're seeing.
So I'll make the bull case for Bitcoin, or a sophomore bull case for Bitcoin. And I'm like you, I'm a no-coiner. I'm an investor in a company called Ledger that makes a cold storage hardware wallet, because I think people don't want hot storage because of all the scams you referenced. They want to have it on their own, you know, under their control, and not connected or susceptible to hacks. But other than that, I've never owned a coin. I do find the methodology or the protocol behind Bitcoin, I think there is a certain genius to it, that because of the strategy around having to throw multiple numbers at an equation or a problem that gets increasingly complex, that requires supercomputers, massive power consumption, and then every time a new coin is minted, it gets a little bit harder. And I think they've established what I'll call scarcity credibility, which is the key to any fiat currency, that people believe at 21 million coins, they're going to stop minting. I think there's more scarcity credibility around Bitcoin right now than there is around certain fiat currencies. And as a result, it has become a legitimate store of value with a lot of big players, credible players who are treating it as such. Do you not see a role for Bitcoin post this? Do you think it's going to go the same way as all these other shit coins?
I think that the value of, you know, a deflationary currency or a limited, you know, scarce currency basically has been overstated by a lot of the crypto bulls. You know, there's sort of the gold standard ideology that's being returned to a lot of these, you know, concepts. But, you know, I don't think that actually really holds up to scrutiny. You know, things actually didn't go so great when the U.S. was on the gold standard. There are major issues that come out of, you know, relying on these digitally scarce assets. And you still have to trust that, you know, Bitcoin will actually uphold its promises of only having that number of coins in the end, which, you know, I think is probably likely, but who's to say? You know, it doesn't seem like a reasonable store of value to me. And I think that it has not served as one so far. You know, people who have put money into Bitcoin are not enjoying a stable, you know, store of value at this stage.
Molly White is a software engineer and cryptocurrency critic. In addition to her longer form critical writing about the topic, she maintains the website web3isgoinggreat.com. By the way, I think that's very creative, where she catalogs disasters in cryptocurrency, decentralized finance, NFTs, and other blockchain-based projects. She joins us from, Molly, where are you?
I'm in Maine right now.
You're in Maine. Good for you. Is that a new thing, or are you from Maine?
I'm originally from Maine, and I'm visiting family here.
Good for you. Well, enjoy a Maine-like summer. We appreciate your time, Molly.
Thanks for having me.
Algebra of happiness. We've spoken about the importance of not having a scorecard. I think that a signal of a weak relationship is when one or both parties keep score. And that is, oh, your parents were in town last weekend and I spent time with them. My parents are coming, which means you have to spend time with them. Or I did this for you, or I took the kids to school, which means you have to pick them up. I think a healthier approach to a relationship is to decide what kind of friend, what kind of partner, what kind of spouse, what kind of father, what kind of brother you want to be, and just attempt to be that person and not keep score. Also, to decide if you want to be generous. The problem with successful people, or an externality of being successful, at least it has been for me, is that you start believing that everything like business is a transaction. And if you aren't getting a good deal in that transaction, it's a bad deal. Well, okay, keep in mind the following. It's natural instinct to inflate your contribution to the relationship and diminish theirs. And you're constantly or often going to feel like things are out of whack and you're getting a worse part of the deal. I'm not suggesting that you subject yourself to abuse. I think at some point, if you're constantly in the minus column in a relationship, you may want to decide, A, let that person know that, and B, if it continues, exit the relationship. But there's something liberating around deciding that I'm just going to be a generous boyfriend. This is the kind of son I want to be to my father, and not keep score. And it also results in much healthier relationships. Now, oftentimes, you're going to find yourself in a situation where someone you work with, a friend, a spouse, is contributing more than you are. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It shouldn't last for a long time. But how do you close that gap? I have a lot of people in my life that could just contribute more to the relationship than I do. I have people I work with that are more thoughtful about the business and spend more time trying to make my content sing or try and make me successful than the reverse. And I have people in my personal life who for extended periods of time are just better to me than I am to them. And I'm not proud to say that, but that's the reality. It doesn't close the delta, but it really helps to acknowledge it. You know, I realize I've been focused on work. I realize I haven't been present with the kids. I realize you've had to pick up a lot of slack here. I acknowledge it. I understand it. And I really do appreciate it. And I find that goes such a long way. I think most people in your life don't mind picking up the slack every once in a while, but they need to know that you know, and they need to know that you appreciate it. Close the gap, mind the gap, don't keep score. Our producers are Caroline Chagrin and Drew Burrows. Claire Miller is our associate producer. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. Thank you for listening to the Prop G Pod from the Vox Media Podcast Network. We will catch you next week. I can't see anyone's reaction. I feel very lonely. I feel alone. That was kind of a dad joke. No, not very good. Okay, let me keep looking.
This podcast was supported by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change, Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind our decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why we do the things we do. Listen to Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.